She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And for this next hour, I am going to be asking you to think about a serious topic, nuclear energy, and why it needs to be integrated into all of our thinking. We have a great guest. Hold that thought. You always know that I want to give a shout out to our sponsors who help make these shows possible. For this show, I want to thank the Chapman Automotive Group. They are committed to doing their share and showing they care about the environment and their community every day. We thank them for their support of the Mrs. Green's World mission and vision and for everything they do to make a difference. They are the recipient of many awards for environmental stewardship, and I am proud to have them as one of our sponsors. So now, as they say, on with the show. The name of our show today is Art Speaks, Nuclear Energy. I'm very excited to have as my guest Mary Lou DeRay. She is an award-winning artist, educator, and consummate traveler. Her travels have been awe-inspiring, and they have also motivated her to create amazing work centering on global warming, climate disruption, and most recently, nuclear energy. Her work expresses a deep concern about these issues, and when you go to her website, you will see that that is very clear. And her paintings also express an anxiety about worldwide inequality and injustice. And I'm thrilled to have my friend, Mary Lou DeRay, here with us for the next hour. And thank you for being here and for taking on such a very tough topic.
Hello, and thank you, Mrs. Green, for making our planet a better place. You are a very powerful person doing wonders and making people think, definitely.
I'm doing my best, kiddo, and there are days, you know, we talked a little off air and we've talked since we met last year about some days the journey is more daunting than others. And it's people like you that inspire me to keep going because this message is so important. But let's start a little bit about your background. I always have to, you know, do this. Let's start at the very beginning.
And start at the beginning.
Yes, when this part of your journey began, you are a world traveler, and you've done a lot of other things in your life. Excuse me. So let's start with why and how you paint. And when did you start painting?
Well, actually, painting has been my love all my life. However, jobs and motherhood, which was wonderful, took their place. And after, I would say, many years, I began to really seriously paint. It was therapeutic. It gave me a sense of peace. And it also helped me get a voice that I'm finding even more every day out there. So the environmental aspect of my art, it came about in a kind of strange way. I was doing some, maybe 15 years ago, I was painting on plastic. That's a horrible word. And I thought, what am I going to do? I was trying to figure out how to hang it, how to look at it and light through it, et cetera. And I didn't come up with an adequate way to present it. But then I started painting with oil paints, and on my palette, the paint dried. And I began to peel it off. And I thought, you know, I can reuse this. I can recycle this paint.
You're kidding
so
me.
This is 12 years ago.
Wow.
So I started using these fragments of painted, dried paint, making collages, and just, it's like the seed was planted about recycling. I mean, I've, of course, thought about it all my life, pretty much. Coming from New England, you turn off the lights, you know, you don't waste anything. But this actual using of the dried paint opened a window. And I also began, I was doing a lot of world traveling. A big awakening was the realization of the plastic in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is this soup of
the big blob.
the big blob. It's not the only one. There are others. But I thought, you know, this is where this plastic is going with this dried paint, whatever form it is, it's all ending up there. And then we went to Vietnam and to Bangkok and various other places in that area. And it occurred to me what people used to do in the old days. They would wrap their garbage in leaves, something that could decompose, you know, and they just throw it in the rivers. And that was fine because it would just disappear and decompose and
right.
compost. But now people wrap their garbage in plastic bags, and they do the same thing. They throw it in the river. So you see all this plastic in the rivers, downtown, you know, in the little canals and things like that, that eventually find their way into the ocean. So then we were in Vietnam, in South Vietnam, and walking on the beach, I thought, I'm going to look on the beach to see in just a short, like 100 feet, to see what garbage is on the beach. Well, I took photos, and I thought, I'm going to count all the flip-flops when I landed.
They've actually made documentaries about that, The Journey of the Flip-Flop. And they are indestructible. Probably
they are indestructible.
Flip-flop is floating somewhere in an ocean or on a shore somewhere.
Ah, they're all in this 100-foot space. There were so many flip-flops, along with plastic bottles and toothbrushes and all kinds of detritus. I can never say that. But this stuff was there. So I came back home, and I did this whole series on flip-flops. I painted flip-flops. And it really, while I paint, I think, and I began to realize this is a very serious situation. I mean, more serious than I even realized. Because then you begin to do research, and you see this is not only the 100-foot space on the beach in South Vietnam, but it's also all over the place. And another, I even hate to mention this, but in South Vietnam, we were in Da Nang, and obviously this was just 5 years ago, and the airbase was there. It was all closed. It was very foreboding. And you see the people in Da Nang cannot even drink their own water because it's been so polluted with toxic chemicals.
Ugh.
And the baby, they have to import water in plastic bottles, more plastic. They don't have any money. I don't even know how they're surviving with the water situation. I mean, all these things began to come together, which is heart-wrenching.
Yeah, it's heavy-duty stuff, and it was permeating your very being.
It was. And I, at the same time, I started painting about the Iraq War. And, you know, for some reason, maybe because I have more time, a lot of the elements that were going on in the world began to be part of my being. And I started all these different series, and then I also went to the Holocaust sites in Eastern Europe, did a whole series of work on that. Then I went to Iceland. And Iceland, I would recommend everyone go to Iceland. It is so magnificent. The air is so clean. It is absolutely stunning. But it was also there that I became really concerned about the melting of glacial ice.
Right.
And so I had this thought, what happens if, I mean, it's kind of an odd thought, but what happens if in the evaporation of these great Pacific garbage patch pollution plastic globs, it is absorbed into the air and it comes back down as rain or snow of plastic particles down, you know, at some point.
Right.
So I did some paintings of icebergs, which I call plastic icebergs, because they were, in my mind, made from all this god-awful plastic that was being melted and, you know, coming down, forming ice. So then from there, I went further into the melting of ice and basically just that, and did a whole series of paintings about melting ice and glaciers, and spent some time doing research about that. And then I reached a point, I said, well, I'm going to do something else. And I started doing a series, I'd say 2 years ago, I went to Poland. And this is actually when I was visiting the Holocaust sites in Eastern Europe. And I decided to go down to visit the Black Madonna in Częstochowa, Poland. So I took the train and went down. It was in the winter. And in, we went past this lake that was absolutely black. The
you
lake
are
was.
You're kidding me.
I could, and I had read about dead lakes before, but that I was looking at. I almost was sick. And the trees surrounding the lake were all black. The entire, I mean, it was pitch coal black. And I realized as we were on this old, old train, we went past coal yards, we went past trains that were transporting coal. The air in Czestochowa at night was, you could see, you could almost see the particles in the air of coal. And something like 85% of the electricity in Poland is generated by the burning of coal. So another light, well, it wouldn't be a light bulb went off in this particular instance. Because it's too dark. I mean, that could go in a lot of ways. So I won't go there. I came back home and decided to do a series on the burning, transporting, and mining of coal. And another reason I wanted to do that was because one of my children lives in Idaho, in Sandpoint, Idaho. And there's a train line that goes from across the U.S. through, right through the beautiful, pristine area of Sandpoint on the way to Spokane and on the way to the West Coast. And there are trains that go by in this area just laden, filled, open cars with coal that come from the mines. They're going all to the ports. Then from there, they go to China. So I thought this made me really nervous because if one of these trains or the cars should turn over, it would absolutely destroy, because so the coal was so toxic, it would destroy the lakes, it would do a whole lot of things. Plus, the coal dust is just flying out of these open cars. So in case we were in a restaurant, and I thought, I'm going to count the coal cars just to see how many are on one train. There were 126 open coal cars going across this bridge, across pure, beautiful, it's Lake Pondere, which is in Sandpoint. And it not only goes across that lake, it goes across a lot of other areas. And I thought, there's something wrong with this picture. So I came back into my studio and started a process of painting about coal. And my work is not, I would say, in your face, don't burn coal, you know,
right,
that kind of thing. It's just pictures of coal or some of them are quite abstract, but there were a few that were also pictures of the open top mining in Appalachia. And then I bought a CD that had the really old coal mining songs, which are so depressing. So I'm sitting there painting away, listening to this very sad music, and yet I felt I was doing my part and getting my voice out about the burning of, I mean, the misery caused by the coal mining, not only in our country, but in other countries as well. So that process went on, I would say, for 2 years. It's really hard. When as an artist, you begin to feel what these people have felt, you begin to, I mean, there's no way I could understand being what a coal miner is or the families related to that, but it's a sense that you just get a sense. Very sad.
And one of the things you do, if I could interject, is that, I mean, I have really spent hours reading about what you have written and about your journey. And one of the things you do for me is connect. We're so disconnected as a society. We get our meat packaged in styrofoam and plastic. It doesn't come from, you know, farm factories. It just comes from Safeway. But what you have been able to do for me, and I'm sure for other people that engage, is to say, these are things that should make you sick to your stomach. We need to face them. We need to look this ugliness in the face and then be inspired to do something about it. I mean, the impacts of this, it's linked to our thinking and older adults. We have no idea about the high pollution levels, you know, as it relates to our physical health decline. You know, I interviewed this woman, amazing woman, Dominique Browning, who heads up Moms Clean Air Force. I mean, it sounded so wacky to me, She's brilliant, and she works as a part of the Environmental Defense Fund. And I mean, our very air that we breathe here in the United States is under attack. That is not hyperbole. You know, the Koch brothers, famous. I want to bash them more than I bash Monsanto on a daily basis. But they're spending hundreds of million dollars to dismantle the EPA and gut the Clean Air Act. So to me, your work says why that is so bad. Why we need to care about our elders, why we need to care about our children, which are the two spectrums that it impacts the most. Well, there's my short little ramp back to painting about coal.
Well, you're exactly right. In doing this work, I became not involved, but learned a lot about the groups that are trying, that are really working behind the scenes in Appalachia. There's a, if you go online, you just look them up. There are some there who are working really hard to fight the coal industry, Duke Power for one. And Duke is not only owner of a lot of mines, but they also are involved in the nuclear industry. I mean, it's just this whole, it's all under one seams, one glove. So, I, you know, I was doing, painting the coal and thinking and the burning and the transporting and the danger. And I also went to China, where this was maybe 5 years ago, where the air was so bad you could not even see the tops of the buildings, and where you realize that these people, the poor people, the apartment buildings are heated by briquettes of coal. So there's so much pollution. The people are out in the countryside burning coal to cook their food. They have, it's a sort of packed in this round, you know, it looks like a hockey puck kind of size, and that's what they burn for their, you know, to cook their food and to heat themselves. And we were at the Great Wall, and this was actually prior to the Olympics, and they were building like crazy in Beijing. But we went to the Great Wall, and around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I looked, it was sort of clear, I looked a little bit down toward Beijing, and there was this brown cloud that was advancing toward us. I mean, literally, almost like a, you know, you see, you have the dust clouds in Tucson and Phoenix. Well, this was a dust cloud of pollution. It was so intense. It was, I mean, I don't ever want to go back there and breathe this, but this is from coal, and we hear stories of China trying to get rid of their coal industries, but they're not really. They're also building new coal plants. So in any case, I was doing that, painting away, and then I realized that the Paris climate talks were going to happen, and that all of these things, the plastic pollution, the coal pollution, the air pollution from a, you know, industry, from a variety and fossil fuel burning, was going to be discussed. So it seemed to me that it was out there. People began to, people were becoming really aware of what was happening. So for some reason, I thought, this is it. I've done what I can do in my mind anyway about coal.
Right.
So I had this thought, and I think this is before I met you, Gina, or it might have been around the same time. I have no idea where this came from, but an artist has a lot of freedom here mentally.
Thank goodness.
I thought, I'm going to paint about nuclear. So this was in, when was this, November, something like that, just prior to the Paris climate talks.
Right.
And I thought, oh, you know, I'm just going to paint about nuclear. It's no big deal. So then I didn't do anything right away because it was the holidays, and then I had a big accident, unfortunately, but fortunately, I think Mother Nature gave me this accident because it made me, I couldn't walk for 2 months.
You literally had to stop.
I had to
stop dead in your tracks, no hyperbole, and sit.
Nothing, no escaping. No escaping all these nasties.
Poor Alan. I'm just kidding.
Well, he was wonderful.
The caregiver. Oh, my goodness.
The wonderful caregiver.
Yes, yes.
So terrific. But in any case, I was forced to be still. And it was 2 months, 3 months. Now it's going on 4 months. So I thought, I'm going to start working on my desire to paint, quote, nuclear energy. And I thought, how does one do that? I mean, I wouldn't have known an atom from a neutron or a proton to any of these things, and I really wasn't sure how to approach the topic. And
okay,
I,
you have to hold that thought. I mean, if you can imagine that 20 minutes has passed, I cannot. It felt like about five. So everybody, stay here with me. We're hearing about one woman's journey to covering the important topic of nuclear energy. Stay tuned. Mary Lou Duray has lots more to share.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific Time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for being with us. This is the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And some pretty heavy-duty stuff that we have to think about today, and really important. We can't be afraid nor walk away from some of the heavier and bigger issues facing us as a planet. They impact us all, whether we want to think about it or not. And just another quick shout-out and thanks to the Chapman Automotive Group for their support of Mrs. Green's World mission and vision. The name of our show today is Art Speaks, Nuclear Energy. Nuclear energy. I said it right five times. Joining us for this hour is Mary Lou Duray. She is an award-winning artist, educator, and consummate travel. And I want to add to that, she's a world changer. She's an artist and a world changer that has taken on a very big purpose and certainly highlights the important work that artists play in the world at, with her messages through her art and thought-provoking, to say the least. And Mary Lou, before we continue with the journey of your coverage of nuclear, and there's so many things to cover, at what point did you start, or did you always write about your paintings? Because to me, it was compelling for me to be learning on this journey about your work, to look at the paintings, to contemplate what I thought, what the messages were, and then to read about the insight that clearly came from very deep within your soul. Did you always write about them? Sometimes do you, sometimes don't you? How did the I think it's such another important component that you've added. How did that come about?
Well, first of all, these days, an artist, to be more or less with it, has to have a website.
And God knows we're with it.
Well, I'm actually updating my website now because I don't have any of my nuclear work on it yet. However, when you do a website, you have to have an artist statement, and you have to have an artist bio. And writing an artist statement is extremely challenging. It makes you think and ponder, what is it that you're stating? What is it you're trying to say? So that was one of the very beginnings about how to write. It's not easy, but being an artist, you're by yourself, you paint, you talk to yourself, you don't talk to anybody else, you don't have to write about it. So that aspect is simple. But when you get to put it into words, it is a challenge. And then another component of being an artist today, which I think is important, is having a blog. So doing a blog is another challenge. You actually put yourself out there, for better or for worse. You write about what you think you're trying to say, and you really don't. I mean, I'm not thinking, well, I'm not going to write this because no one's going to like what I'm doing.
Right,
blah, blah, blah.
Right. You just show up.
You just show up. And there was this little book, I don't have it in front of me, that was pretty much that was the title of it, Show Up. Do it. You know, what are you afraid of? And that takes courage to a certain extent. And
to a great extent, because you're putting yourself out there. It's a very vulnerable spot. Open your soul, share it with the world, and see what comes back at you. I resemble that remark.
You do. You're wonderful at that. And when you write, it's very readable, it's easy to digest, and your topics are heavy duty, but they're graspable. And that's a certain talent. Well, I don't know if I have that talent, but I started the writing, and I post it also on Facebook. And I'm also doing Twitter and LinkedIn. Sometimes I think about it. And sometimes, in any case, on Facebook, there are a few people that don't agree with what I'm doing. And I don't fight back, quote, fight back. On Facebook, I just let people, as you say, think and post what they want to post. That's fine with me. And I've also started writing a column on other environmental artists for ManhattanArts.com. It's also the Healing Power of Art. And I'm finding that also takes a lot of interviewing with these artists, thinking, writing about them and getting their voice out there. So it takes a lot of, I don't know what the word would be, thinking, congealing, synthesizing.
Like an integration of thought, something like
integration
that.
Integration of thought with very few words.
Right.
So the writing, I think the blog and the website were the beginnings of my writing about it. And then I want to get back to the question that you asked, you know, how did I start to do the nuclear, which why this thought came to me, I have no idea. And primarily because I'm not a scientist. However, because I had this two-month time frame in which to do nothing except research, I did a lot of research. There is a lot available on Google, all over the place.
A lot.
On both sides, the people who believe in nuclear energy, the people who don't believe in nuclear energy, just basically what it is, how it works, what the dangers are. It is, well, ultimately, it is gut-wrenching. And so I have a friend who's been involved in the environmental work for years, more years than I can imagine. So I said to him, I want to start doing work, artwork, about nuclear energy. So I'm going to read to you what he wrote back, because I saved that email. This was last fall. So this is what he said. He said, aside from all the air quality and public health benefits of moving away from fossil and nuclear power, electricity will cost less when supplied only by renewables, and the transition will likely create more jobs than any other industry for decades. The politics are lagging way behind our actual ability to decarbonize in a deliberate and cost-effective manner. This is where your paintings are important. Rational argument will not change many minds, and very few people read. We're going to have to rely on images to communicate what needs to be done. Your paintings are so powerful, keep them coming. So that's what he said.
That's frameable.
Isn't that amazing?
I mean, it had to speak right into your soul. No kidding.
It did.
I mean, you live and work and hope for those kinds of things to land, and it did. It's amazing. Yeah, I'd be framing that, especially on dark days when you know it's hard to get up and continue the good work.
Well, it's true. And this was before I started painting, actually, because I was nervous. I thought, what am I going to do? How am I going to attack this topic? So based on what I was reading, et cetera, the entry door for me became Fukushima. And because I thought and saw and read about all these, the total somewhere was 30 million plastic garbage bags stored and filled chock full with radioactive storage waste, placed all over the area in the Fukushima prefecture and other in people's backyard. You know, they're cleaning the soil, supposedly, in Fukushima, so that the topsoil will no longer be there, won't be irradiated anymore, and they're stuffing it into these plastic bags that only have a 3-year lifespan. The government says, oh, we'll move them. Well, there's no place to move them. There's no place to put them.
There
later.
Is no away.
There's no away.
You can't throw them away. There's no away.
No away. And these, and then, you know, there's so much going on, but one of the main concerns in Japan is they have the 2020 Olympics, and they're trying to tart and clean everything for that time frame. Well, they haven't done very much yet in Fukushima. It's still, they don't have any solutions to the terrible triple meltdown, et cetera. In any case, to get back to the painting aspect of this, I started with a drawing of these plastic bags. And when you're drawing and sketching quietly, you do a lot of thinking. You begin to, you delve deeply into the topic. And it was, it became, and I read about it, and it became very clear to me that these bags, first of all, it's plastic again, as well as filled with radioactive waste. It's a very bad, very dangerous situation. And they're trying to, and what I've read since, they're trying to clean this up, but every time it rains, every time it snows, the mountains that are in the area just bring back more radioactivity. So they're really into this soil.
And it's so 5 years later. It's 5 years later, people. I mean, just a little, another mini little rant, but when you started talking to me about this and I started reading your blogs, I'm Mrs. Green. I care deeply. I didn't talk about Fukushima at all. It's like, oh my gosh, I wonder what's going on over there. And it was so compelling and riveting to me. And that's what I said. We have to have you on a show. The thousands of listeners that I have to heighten their awareness and put it on their list of things to not file away, but to keep very much on top of. And they can do that by subscribing to your blog. But go ahead. We don't want to digress. It's just, well, the passion that you bring to the conversation ignited me.
Oh, good. I hope it ignites a lot of people. I mean, I have friends saying, Mary Lou, why are you doing this? I just don't want to even pay attention to this.
Right.
I just want to go smell the roses.
Yes.
And I can totally understand that. This is very hard to
read
about 24/7. It hurts. It really hurts. So in any case, over 160,000 people have been displaced from their home in the Fukushima area. Some of these people, they're trying to clean the soil so that they can go back and live in this area again. There's no way. It's radioactive. They're, you know, and the children, there are increasing cases of thyroid cancer. The water is contaminated. The water is leaking out of the plants. There's been a meltdown. They don't even know where the core went. I mean, it could have gone, there are a lot of could-haves, but from what you read, it could have gone all the way down into the groundwater, which heats it up, steams it. It comes back out as radioactivity of various and sundry kinds. And, you know, there's so much written about this. There's any type of radioactivity, if you ingest it, especially cesium, it gets into your body and doesn't go away. And this is just the beginning. It's just the beginning. So I started with this one drawing, and then I evolved into a more simple painting. That was my second piece. The third piece, the birds are dying. The birds are disappearing. The butterflies are, and this wonderful woman, I read about her last night, scientist, took it upon herself to check this one blue butterfly. She made numerous trips to the area, and I think she's 54. She ultimately died. This is already only 5 years. She has died. And she did this to show the dangers that happened in the DNA to these insects, et cetera. So my third painting was of a dead bird in the plastic bag. And that, it was heart-wrenching. It's a blackbird.
The little blackbird.
The little blackbird. And you know, when I was doing the Cole series, there's the little blackbird also. And the song Blackbird, which warns, you know, the blackbird flew and warned a wife, do not let your husband go into the mine that day, and sure enough, it exploded. The blackbird is becoming a symbol here. So in case, so the blackbird in my Fukushima bag, and the fourth painting is all red, very intense, and it's almost a face that's crying. These people are who've been misplaced. There have been suicides, divorces, sick children. The list goes on and on. And this is in Fukushima. If a nuclear danger were to happen, let's say there's the Indian Point where it's leaking in upstate New York, other reactors all over New York, how many millions of people, if something were to happen there, There's no way that they can get them.
We cannot even begin to imagine that.
You cannot
with those,
begin
the
to
concentration
imagine
of population. And it to me, it's, I don't even want to say it, but it is potentially a ticking bomb. Let's be honest and throw it out there.
There is no safe nuclear energy.
No safe.
At all. And the more I read, the more I am convinced of that. So my next paintings, which I'm actually working on now, I'm shifting away from the plastic bags, the storage bags. And by the way, they had this enormous rainstorm, I think it was a couple of years ago, like a big typhoon in the area of Fukushima, and Fukushima Daiichi, if you say it correctly. And some of these bags were washed away, split open. People were actually going into the water by hand and trying to restuff this radioactive waste.
Oh, my God, help us.
Which is so, you can just imagine.
Yeah, they'll die.
They'll die.
I mean, they will die. That's the end of that story. And I did read that each bag, am I correct, holds a ton of radioactive waste, each bag. And in an area that has typhoons, that has tsunamis, that has
volcanoes. Japan is right on the Ring of Fire.
It's a volatile place in our
There's so much to say.
World.
Yeah. So one, there are some tremendous people who are, not tremendous, there are very intelligent people who are actually going to Fukushima, who are actually making studies. And this one, Arne Gunderson, I will definitely give you the information for this, called Fairwinds. What he said recently, they had to turn off all the nuclear power plants in Japan after Fukushima. They did turn them off. And people said, how did the Japanese have electricity? They survived. Do you know how they survived? They conserved. They didn't use as much electricity.
Right, right.
They don't need the nuclear power plants. It's so...
It's so telling.
It's so telling.
And I did read the article because I think you sent me a link about Arne Gunderson. I read one of the articles and, you know, he talked something about the cost to clean it up, which is over $500 billion. And, you know, that's a horrible number. It's big. But it begs the question, is it possible to ever clean this mess up in our lifetime? Ever?
No. They say no.
I don't think so either. After all I read, you had me. It's like, no, we're not. This is here forever, folks.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big area of Japan. And what happens, the nuclear power industry, a lot of, from what I've read, there are politicians who have invested in the nuclear power industry. So, of course, they want to keep it going. The power industry in Japan, the banks, have lent a lot of money. So they want their money back. They want to restart so that they can get money from the electricity, which is expensive. And that's how they earn their money. So to not have the money coming in from the nuclear power plants, I don't know what it's going to do for Japan. Ultimately, I'm not an economist. But it's a serious situation for them and think about the trillions or billions of dollars that could have been used during this time frame to develop wind power, hydroelectric power. That's a lot of money. And they have done. They're beginning to get some wind power and solar power in Japan, but of course it's similar to all over. It's being fought by the politicians.
Let's just underscore that it is renewable, it is clean, there's no downside to solar and to wind and wave energy. I mean, I've been reading a lot about wave energy. It's real, and there's some progress on that, and people talk about the costs, and it disgusts me, because when you talk about the cost of dirty coal, we have no idea what the cost is because it's so heavily subsidized, and the same thing with natural gas.
And the nuclear industry is also heavily subsidized. An interesting term I heard the other day is instead of calling wind, solar, and wave and biomass alternative energies, they should just be called energies. The fossil fuel industry should be called alternative. It's not what we should be using.
Gosh, I love that. I love that.
Isn't that terrific?
Yes, I love that.
This natural energy is the real energy. This is the word that has to come out of this. and keep it in the forefront of our conversation and of our mind, because that is, this is the way it has to go.
I love, love, love that. And that's what we do. We change language around so it fits. It's a euphemism. I mean, the way, you know, collateral damage, that's one of my favorite. Oh, it was collateral damage. So here we are up on the second break already. So I can't actually say time flies when you're having fun, because some of this is
not fun.
But it's very important, and it's flying for me. Everybody, stay here with me. More from Mary Lou Duray, who is really making a message, sending a message through her art about the huge threat of nuclear energy to us as citizens of the planet. Lots more good stuff to talk about. Please stay here with us.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com. and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are inviting you today to think about a very serious topic about nuclear energy, about the threat it is to all of our lives on this planet, as long as there's one nuclear reactor, you know, working. And not only that, it doesn't matter if they shut them down. There's still all of the waste that has to be dealt with. So thank you for joining us. Please listen to that shout out about becoming a sustainer and maybe be called to action so that I can continue with my great team to bring you programs like this that are so important for our future. The name of our show today is Art Speaks, Nuclear Energy. Joining us for this hour is Mary Lou Duray. She is an award-winning artist, educator, consummate traveler. I have to keep adding things like deep thinker and thought changer. And this is about changing our thoughts, getting into our heads and asking the question, what do we think about nuclear energy? What stand are we going to take? Her travels around the world they've been awe-inspiring, but they've also motivated her to create amazing work centered on really important issues for Mrs. Green's World: global warming, climate disruption, and most recently, nuclear energy. I want to take this time to invite and encourage you to visit Mary Lou's website. It's Mary Lou Duray, DaRay.com. And of course, you can find that out by visiting my website and her blog spot at Mary Lou Duray artblog.blogspot.com, where you can view her work, spend some time getting into the message of the painting, and then learn about her very contemplative thoughts and the work, the incredible personal work that it took for her to have it come out of her, is the way I put it. It was inside of her, and she had it come out, and she gives you the why behind them. So now, more about what's going on with nuclear energy. Tell us some of the important things you learned that you shared with me about the cover-ups. I think that's important. And, you know, the number of kids getting cancer. I mean, the numbers are in already. We don't have to wait 10 more years.
Well, that's covered up also. In Japan, they've established a law. The government, the Abe government, has established what they call a secrets law, where no one in Japan is allowed to write about what's going on insofar as the Fukushima Daiichi meltdown. If they do, they either lose their job or they get fired, or it's the same thing, or they just don't, they can't write about it. Plus, the Japanese themselves don't, the people in Japan don't really know what's going on, despite the fact that 70% of the Japanese people do not want nuclear power in Japan. They do not want the nuclear plants reopened. Apparently, 100% of the women, it's interesting, do not want nuclear power in Japan. The cover-up is, as I said, it's not allowed in the press. there's been misleading information almost from day one from TEPCO, which is the electric power company in Japan, about the radioactive waste, that steam that has gone up in the air, the amount of radioactive particles that are in the water, the actual meltdown. They didn't even call it a meltdown, and they finally said, we didn't even look at this at the manuals until, you know, three years later. First of all, they don't know what to do. So they're trying to build a big ice wall containment wall made out of ice that they're going to start up.
Great idea.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you have to have the power. Secondly, it hasn't happened yet. And they're going to try to keep the groundwater from seeping into Fukushima, the meltdown. Everyone thinks this is ridiculous. I don't even know where they got the idea in the first place.
Not to be believed.
Not to be believed. And they're going to, they have storage tanks of to cool the radioactive core. You have to have cool water. So they have water that is run through the plant, and of course it picks up radioactivity, and then that has to go this water has to go someplace. So they've built in a haphazard way with bolts and not really welded storage tanks filled with this water, and they're accumulating almost pretty much like the garbage bags are all around the Fukushima Daiichi area. They're already starting to leak. Where is this water going to go? It's going to go into the ocean, and then eventually where is it going to go? And the fishermen in the area don't even want to get any, you know, they won't touch this area. There's a question there of how radioactive the cesium is in outside our, because I'm in San Francisco. They're finding it in the water, but how dangerous is this?
And who would eat fish? I mean, and which is one of the major sources of food for the Japanese people.
Exactly.
I mean, I know that you sent me something that said tons of waste is pouring into the Pacific Ocean every day. Yes. It hasn't
every
stopped.
Day.
Every day. And I'm thinking, who in their right mind would eat fish? There are more warnings coming out about fish. And as, you know, Sylvia Earle, the blue heart of the ocean, said, she did say, would you eat your Cocker Spaniel? Well, I think people should hold that thought and say, we shouldn't be eating fish. Mercury, the radioactivity, the beat goes on.
The beat goes on. It's extremely concerning. And you do get more information if you look at the list that I'm going to give to you. If people are interested, they can find out more about this. But I want to say a couple more things. Even in the United States, there are some situations that are very problematic, to put it mildly. In Hanover, visit Hanover, Washington, where they created and built and got plutonium for the Manhattan Project. It's getting into the dust in the area. It's leaking into the water, which is the Columbia River. God forbid, that this begins to become a serious leak. The Columbia River is home to many fish, wineries, a whole lot of, you can just imagine. Also, the Indian Point plant in New York, upstate New York, that is leaking into the groundwater as well, radioactivity. There's a situation in St. Louis where they had a dump, this radioactive waste dump, and there's a fire, an underground fire that is burning there, which is slowly creeping toward homes. This should be examined. Yesterday, last night, in the New York Times, I'm going to quote a title, "Nuclear plant leak threatens drinking water wells in Florida."
This is
extremely serious. It's the Turkey Point Nuclear Power Plant, which is south of Miami. So they're leaking, this plant is leaking polluted water into Biscayne Bay. Well, we all know that Florida is built on limestone. This is going into the groundwater, and tritium, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that. If you begin to look up the meaning of that, and it's extremely toxic, and the government saying, well, it's not really that toxic, et cetera, but that is one of the results of this leak. So that's in the water in Florida now. That's Florida. So various places in the U.S., you can just read. You can find out about this.
And thank you. Know, every day of my life, I think I am so grateful for Google, because there is a lot of good information out there. And what I like about it is you can put in and find out what you want to know, and also what the opposition is saying. So you can test your thoughts and really find everything's free and available if you take the time to do it. So that's a great invitation. You know, just type in Google threat of nuclear energy, and believe me, your screen will light up, sadly.
It will. And if you want to actually look at the other side, you can make up your own mind. You know, the whole idea is to research, and eventually you'll come to a conclusion. I came to the conclusion that nuclear power is something I do not want to see in this planet evolve, and the money is being spent still to build new nuclear power plants at enormous costs. So we only have a few more minutes. I'm going to go through really quickly some of the reasons that I feel, and I've read this, to oppose nuclear power. First of all, the waste. Well, there are a lot of reasons. There's a danger of the waste, which is stored there. There's a chance that it could be a nuclear target,
right,
for terrorists.
Oh my gosh, there's that.
And one of the articles I read yesterday, and actually read maybe a month ago, is that when they were searching in some of the terrorist rooms or apartments in Belgium, they found some information where these terrorists were looking at nuclear sites. And yesterday they immediately did even say in the paper that they increased security at a nuclear site. All it takes is, I won't tell you what, but
okay,
it's a concern.
I need to get through the day.
Yeah. So every nuclear power reactor makes massive amounts of radioactive waste, which is deadly. I'm just going through a list here. The explosion of the Chernobyl nuclear power station was the worst industrial accident of any kind in history, and people are now equating Fukushima at that level. Every radiation exposure increases our risk of cancer. Uranium mining is overwhelmingly done on land left to indigenous people, especially our Native Americans. There's also a video that I looked at last night for an hour about what it's done to the indigenous people and the Aborigines in Australia.
Oh.
It is tragic. Nuclear power is the most expensive energy source that has ever been implemented at an industrial scale. Living with nuclear waste is a challenge. Nuclear power reactors release radioactivity to the air and water on an ongoing basis, even with no accident. Coastal reactors, if you can just imagine, which is what Fukushima was, have been shown to kill sea mammals and threaten the endangered sea turtle. And lastly, and this is a list that I'm reading, in order to live with the immense danger imposed by both the nuclear reactor and its waste, the federal government requires such a high level of control that local communities effectively lose their voice in decision-making and leadership, which brings up a point. When you're voting at this coming election, keep in mind, who would you like to have be in control of the trigger alert? This is no one is talking about that.
Right.
This is
right.
A serious, very serious topic. There are thousands of nuclear weapons available, and who do you want to be in control of that? And lastly, what I do want to say, what is it that we can do? How can we change this direction into more nuclear power plants that are being built? First of all, it's up to us. We can create a movement. We can help stop. They did this in Germany. People who have nuclear power plants in your backyard, actually, you should look around. You'd be surprised. They created a movement. They said, we do not want this anymore. So the politicians in those areas realized in order to be reelected, they had to listen to the voice of the people.
Right, right. And I just want to shout out to everybody, don't ever for a minute think that your voice doesn't count. It changes everything. I don't know about you, but I was thrilled when the DARC Act did not pass. It was one of them, and that was about GMO labeling. But for me, it was such a victory of the voices of the people. So people, thousands of you that listen to this show, find this cause and figure out a way to let your voice be heard. I mean, we have Palo Verde Power Plant, right? Here, yeah, there's a big one.
Is that a nuclear plant?
Yes. Yeah, is right. I'm thinking that's just not too far away.
Look at it. What's happening to the waste that's coming from that? Research it. Be involved. It is very dangerous. And, I mean, if you want nuclear power, that's one thing. If you don't want it, or if you want to find out more, try to find out who owns
Palo Verde. Yeah.
Who is the power behind the throne there? You know, you'd be so surprised. This is an issue that really needs investigation.
And nobody talks about it.
Nobody talks about it.
And it is a source. I mean, there's some parts of southern Arizona, but it supplies power to Southern California, to Los Angeles, to San Diego. I mean, it's a big power generating station. So the implications are there. And I just, it's the rest, the last 5 minutes are yours, but I want to go back to what you said about this whole thing that inspires me about don't drink the Kool-Aid about these are more expensive sources when you're talking about wind and solar and wave energy. These are the real energy sources, and we're calling them alternative. It's just such a mindset change for me that I will be shouting out about.
Good.
It's a great takeaway for the show. So go ahead.
It's a buzzword. Alternative energy is a buzzword that no longer applies because it is the energy. The other issue that we really can do to create, it has enormous potential, is we need to change our habits. We need to consume less energy. We don't need to have the air conditioning, oh my God, in restaurants where it's like 60 and you freeze. You don't need that. Open the windows.
Right, right.
And in buildings where I drive by at night and all these lights are on, this is not necessary. So we have to change our habits, use less power, and then we will effect change even that way. It's very, very important to do that and to change our mindset and get, you know, politics are now in the hands of corporations, especially electric corporations. We have to take that out of there. We just have to become more involved.
And it's surprising how little it can take. When I had Dominique Hermosillo on the Dominique Browning on the show the other day, she said one of the most powerful things you can do is write a postcard to one of your elected officials. And if you care enough and you get 5 girlfriends or 10 girlfriends, and I say girlfriends because they're more likely to do it in many cases, write postcards to your elected representative about an issue that you care about, that impacts your lives and the lives of your children, the air you breathe, and those things get noticed. It's shocking to me that they don't need to get 200. If they get 10 or 20, the red flag is up. And I know these offices, I've known lots of elected officials, they start paying attention. It doesn't take a big, huge campaign, and you can get a voice and you can get probably meetings, but you know, you have my radar up on this so incredibly tuned up because it's a really huge threat and so important in my role as, you know, a spokesperson for Mother Earth. I mean, I feel it.
You are.
You and I were talking about the heaviness of the news these days, and we have to support each other and understand that we all said yes. And women's voices of the earth and in the arts are so important, and you support that work. And you use a powerful medium, and I hope people go and look at your paintings because they will be.
Thank you.
I wanted to say sucked in, but it's more drawn in. I think that's a better use. You get drawn in, and you're looking at it, and it's riveting. And I want to see them in person because they're really important.
Well, one of them actually, my little sad little bird, did just win a prize in New York.
Wonderful.
So
where is it?
Well, it's online.
Okay.
Because I have the painting here, but the won the prize in New York, which is great. But I wanted to say one last thing.
Okay, hurry. We have 30 seconds about.
The Fukushima Daiichi catastrophe demonstrates that the risks attached to nuclear power far outweigh the benefits. And we are a democracy. We have the opportunity to get involved to change that scenario.
Find your voice. Find your voice, because our future depends on it. Everybody, what an enjoyable, content-rich, really important on-purpose show. This week we have on April 12th, Jeff Yockey from TEP, our largest utility, on our Down to Earth show about their energy portfolio. And on the 16th, Mike Crimmins and Zach Guido from the University of Arizona talking about El Nino, another big one in our world. Make it a great green day. Mary Lou DeRay, thanks for showing up in my world.
Thank you so much for being there.